double parchment. And what we'll do is we'll kind of talk about both of them together in more, somewhat more general terms. There is a link in the themes of Tazria and Metzora in terms of our plan of talking about Revi. So we won't go into detail so much about Revi of Tazria, especially, which goes into details of particular afflictions. So we'll talk more generally about that theme and about how it relates to the parsha overall. And then when we get to Metzora, so we'll see that also focuses on one of the categories here, Nigei Batim. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. So to talk generally for Tazria and Metzora, so we know that there is the theme that Chazal have identified in the concept of Saras, in the affliction that is described here in detail in these parshios, and the whole process of healing and recovering from these afflictions. I sometimes joke that there's a conflict of interest between the rabbi and the Baal Kore in terms of these parshios, whether you want it to be a double parsha or a single parsha. So the Baal Kore would rather have a single parsha and have to lean so much on one Shabbos. But the rabbi would rather have a double parsha, so he doesn't have to speak 2 weeks in a row about leprosy. Not that leprosy is really an accurate translation, but it doesn't seem like such an appetizing topic to focus on even for one Shabbos, let alone for two Shabbosim. Except that we know that it's really not just about that, but that it's about spiritual causes, that these physical afflictions are, as the Rishonim explain, actually miraculous physical afflictions that don't really have a source in biology, and if it did, that certainly wouldn't explain how it affects clothing and houses. So, as they point out, the Ramban and others discuss, so these are physical manifestations of spiritual shortcomings, and most prominently, it's associated with Lashon Hara. And therefore, to have the opportunity to speak about Lashon Hara, as you know, we can never speak enough Lashon Hara, there's always more to say about it. And also, the truth is, Lashon Hara alone can take up so much time, but Chazal actually identify a number of averos that are connected to Tzaras, including murder and Gilirayus and other such averos, but Lashon Hara certainly gets the most attention. And Chazal understand that the word Metzora is a contraction of Motzi Shem Ra, and also, even if it's not explicit in these parashios that it's about Lashon Hara, it really is explicit in the Torah later. It's explicit in Parshas Balosva, because there the Torah tells us that Miriam spoke Lashon Hara, and she immediately was afflicted with Tzaras. So the association between Tzaras and Lashon Hara, and focusing on that Avera specifically, even more than the other ones that the Gemara talks about in the middle of Erechin. The middle of Erechin is where you can find the most concentrated discussion of Hilchos Lashon Hara in Shas, in the Shas Bavli. In the Talmud Yerushalmi, in Maseches Peah, there's a concentrated discussion of Hilchos Lashon Hara. And throughout Shas, you find quite a lot of Lashon Hara, and a lot of both Hashkafic and Halachic material about Lashon Hara. But the biggest concentration in Shas Bavli is in the middle of Erechin, and that's where the Gemara tells us also about this association between Saras and Lashon Hara. But in addition to that, so we find that there is a important symbolism here, and talking about it actually is particularly litoelis, to borrow a Lashon Hara phrase, that the idea that we don't have these afflictions nowadays, that they seem to have disappeared, so that is actually bad news for us, because this is an opportunity. These miraculous appearances is actually an opportunity to get immediate feedback, and that's a tremendous bracha, and we'll see a little bit more about that when we talk about Parshas Metzora. But the idea that one takes a wrong step and immediately sees it turn up on his body, so that is a feedback directly from a Kaddish Baruch Hu that allows for a correction while there's still time, and that's truly a bracha. And the Chafetz Chaim, if I remember correctly, writes that the reason we don't have Tzaras anymore, the reason it disappeared, is because we don't have the purification process as a possibility. We don't have all of the steps for that. And the point of Saras is not that we should suffer. The point is that we should come back from it, that we should get the lesson and should be both spiritually and physically cured. So if we can't have the recovery process, so then it doesn't make sense to have the Saras itself. But we can still connect to this, and this is yet another iteration of the point that we've been making since the middle of Shmos, that Davka, these psukim, these parashios that talk about things that are not in practice today, it's a particular kiyum for us to study them and to learn about them. And specifically also, as we mentioned in some of the contexts, when it's about a kapara, when it's something that is supposed to bring about an atonement, and an atonement specifically through a change in behavior, so then, all the more so, we can still reach that goal, even Bizman has that, by learning about these concepts and pondering them and taking their lessons to heart. So therefore, maybe we should lament that it's a double parsha and we don't have 2 full weeks to talk about this, because there's a lot that can be accomplished by thinking about these themes and trying to understand exactly what the message is, and to appreciate that, yes, we don't have to actually go through the physical discomfort or the isolation that comes with these manifestations, but we can still get the benefit by learning about it and by contemplating it. And that Gemara in Erchin also says that Talmud Torah is a corrective for Lashon Hara, and some of the Haskamas that were written to the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, there's a Haskama there that was written by some of the Dayanim in Vilna, and they raised the sad question, says that here Talmud Torah is supposed to be a corrective to Lashon Hara, and yet we know that, unfortunately, there are Talmidei Chachamim who speak Lashon Hara too, because we all speak Lashon Hara, so it doesn't seem like the Talmud Torah is necessarily keeping it away. And they wrote in this Haskama to the Sefer Chafetz Chaim that it doesn't just mean any Talmud Torah, but it means a focused Talmud Torah that points our attention towards the issues in Lashon Hara, and that will hopefully create an impression on our souls, and that will indeed keep us away from it, or if we're talking about past Lashon Hara, will rectify the character issues that brought us there in the first place. So whether it's about learning Hilchos Lashon Hara, or it's about learning Hilchos Saras, and the relationship between the two, and there are those who understand the pasuk in Sefer Devarim, which writes that Hishomer Benega HaTzaras, that we should beware regarding Saras, that that actually is a mitzvah telling us to avoid the behaviors that lead to Saras. So that is maybe one more source for the prohibition of Lashon Hara. There's quite a few sources in the Torah that are associated with the prohibition of Lashon Hara, but some understand that that's another one, Hishomer Benega HaTzaras. So once again, we can get a fulfillment of that through studying these parashios and thinking about that and trying to consider what the lessons are. And there is a medrash that is associated with Parashat Metzora, the beginning of Parashat Metzora, which tells the story of a person who is perhaps ironically identified as a Rochel. So Rochel, you know, that's the word the Torah uses for Lashon Hara, in the most commonly cited source in Parshas Kedoshim, Lo Selech Rochel B'Amecha, we shouldn't walk around as a talebearer, however you want to translate that. If you look at 4 different English translations, you'll find 4 different words for Rochel. But normal usage, it means a peddler. So in that medrash, it talks about an incident with a peddler who was going from town to town. And this medrash appears also in different places. There's also a statement in the Bavli that tells a little bit of a similar story. But just to kind of put them together, it describes a Rochel who was going from town to town, and he got to Tzipori, and he made a public announcement, who's interested in a long life. So it sounded like one of those traveling salesmen. So everyone gathers around him, and they want to see what kind of potion he's selling. And it turns out it's not a potion, it's a pasuk. He starts reading from Sefer Tehillim, Mi ha'isha chafetz chayim ohev yamim leros tov. Who is it who wants life, who loves days, and he wants to see good things? What should he do? Nitzor l'shon chameros v'sachem midaber mirma. He should guard his tongue. So it doesn't seem that people were disappointed. They were actually impressed by this, even though it wasn't a potion or a chemical. And the Gemara says even Rav Yanai was blown away by this. And he says, actually, I know this also from Mishlei, that David HaMelech's son, Shlomo, wrote a similar point, and Shomer Pivul Shono, Shomer Mitzaris Nafsho. So there's quite a lot, as you can imagine, there's quite a lot of commentary and drush written about that medrash, quite an extensive literature about it, as to what exactly was the point of this Rochel, and why was it considered to be such a lesson that even Talmidei Chachamim, who were present, were so blown away and were so inspired by what he was saying. And among the suggestions, there are quite a few suggestions, but among the suggestions is that the focus on Ohev Yomim L'Ros Tov, it's not just about seeing this as a mitzvah or an avera with consequences in the next world, but the specific reference of Ohev Yomim L'Ros Tov is telling us that there's an impact in this world, and that to be able to experience what happens when one is not careful, or conversely, when one is careful, so then that is something that manifests itself in ways that we can actually relate to, in ways that we can see with our own eyes, and we can experience in our lives. So the idea that the real world and our actual relationships are impacted by this in ways that are perceptible is part of this message, and that was something that the crowd very much appreciated. So what's going on here, the idea that there's a physical manifestation on the body or on the house or on the clothes that comes from these types of transgressions is a way of calling attention in a very blatant fashion to both the spiritual deficiencies but also the actual harm that happens. And one shouldn't think that these kinds of actions don't have any actual impact. One should understand, I mentioned yesterday a little bit, that Chazal have a statement about the Midah Keneged Midah, that the person who has Saras ends up having to be put into isolation. And Chazal say it's appropriate because he should have to think about how he caused other people to be isolated and separated through the way they were spoken about. And that highlighting of the actual social impact of Lashon Hara is very significant and tells us also about how these parshiyos are trying to make that message. And some who point out, there's a discussion about this in the Sefer Mishulchan Eliyahu Baruch, where recently was published, Rebbe Baruch Kamai Mir, where he discusses the question of where is the Midah Keneged Midah in the affliction itself. That to say, okay, so the isolation is a Midah Keneged Midah, but we could declare isolation without that. And some say that it relates to the declaration of a Kohen, and that shows the positive power of speech rather than the negative power of speech that got us here in the first place. This is that does also doesn't require tzaras in order for that. You could have a declaration of a Kohen, you could have an isolation without this bodily affliction. So how exactly is it Midah Keneged Midah? And he notes the pasuk in Tehillim, where David HaMelech talking to Doeg about his Lashon Hara regarding him, and David compares it to a sharp razor, and the message seems to be that just like a razor cuts at the body and inflicts all that damage, so too, that's what Lashon Hara actually does, even though we don't necessarily see it right away, and therefore it's Midah Keneged Midah that it should then be inflicted upon the speaker. But presumably, there's another appropriateness here, that it's not just about the Midah Keneged Midah, but also that this does cause one to recognize that there is a negativity and an ugliness that was being suppressed, but it is expressing itself physically. It's a little bit in the spirit of the picture of Dorian Gray, a classic novel where somebody was able to transfer all of the impacts of his lifestyle onto a painting while he remained pristine. So the idea that there's a physical manifestation of one's character deficiencies and that you can learn from that and that you can get the message, so that does seem to be what is the purpose of the whole concept of Nigayim and Tzaras. And even without having that actually be a part of our lives today, so we can certainly reflect upon this and use that as a powerful force of instruction. So to segue from there into Mitzorah, where the fourth Aliyah focuses on Nigei Batim, this affliction happening to a house. So first, just a word of introduction to that, that it's interesting that the Gemara in Sanhedrin, this is the less well-known one, but the Gemara in Sanhedrin has this as part of the list of, at least according to one opinion, of things shlohayuv lo asid lios, that have never actually happened. So this is more well-known in connection with the Ben Sora Mora, and that's where it's being discussed in Sanhedrin, and that the Gemara has the opinion that Ben Sora Mora has never happened, never will happen. So together with that, Nigei Batim is listed there also. So we have to think for a second what that means, especially because we also have a tradition in Chazal that there is a progression here, which we'll talk about in a moment, that the lesson that's supposed to come with these afflictions makes its way slowly to the person's body, and that it first starts in the house and then goes to the clothing and then goes to the body. So if that's the case, so according to this statement in Chazal, if there was never Nigei Batim, so then it sounds like there were never the other two either. So you have to figure out exactly how to interpret that. Could also mean, though, that what the Gemara goes on to say, similar to Ben Sora Mora, is not that the issue itself never happened, but that the halachos associated with the consequences didn't happen, because the details that are necessary are so specific and so complicated that the chances of it actually fitting all those details are so slim. So that's certainly the case when the Gemara talks about Ben Sora Mora, and it gives a similar discussion regarding just exactly what the blemish in the household has to look like, that it's not so likely that you're ever going to have all those circumstances that are going to come together. So it could be that maybe the phenomenon of Nigei Batim did happen, and perhaps that's a part of this whole progression here, but the halacha that requires a very precise set of circumstances, so maybe that's what it means, maybe that never happened. But okay, so one way or another, so here the concept is introduced by a focus on Eretz Canaan. So the Aliyah begins, won't go pasuk by pasuk, but just note this at the beginning. Pasuk Aliyah begins by Dabar Hashem Oshel Aaron Lemor Ki Savo El Eretz Canaan. Hashem Inosim Lachem Achuza Benasati Neged Saras Beis Eretz Achuzaschem. Welcome to Israel. You're going to find yourself with a blemished house. So the association between Eretz Canaan and the land and this particular phenomenon of Nigei Batim. So the Ramban has a comment over here where he emphasizes the miraculous nature of Nigei Batim and Nigei Begadim, like we mentioned before, that even if it's somehow explicable from a biological perspective, that wouldn't explain how it gets on clothing and houses. So this is a miraculous occurrence. And the Ramban notes that the fact that it's associated with Eretz Yisrael specifically is not like it's a mitzvah tliya baretz. This is not like a Zrayim or things like that. But rather the point is that there's a certain heightened spiritual sensitivity that is being reflected here. And the idea that the Teva is going to be so responsive to the spiritual flaws and to the messages that need to be conveyed. So that's the kind of thing that only happens in Eretz Yisrael. And specifically, we're talking about the real estate. So that notion is something that requires the context of Eretz Yisrael and its spiritual elevation in order to make that point. The question is also brought up that when it comes to the idea of the negayim that affect the body, so there one of the issues is that the person is choshev b'ksherim. So that's something that Chazal raised as well, that there is an association between suspecting the innocent and negayim. And that idea is necessary because it has to be more blatant, because similar to Lashon Hara, maybe even more so, that somebody who's choshed b'ksherim is not going to perceive what he's doing as any kind of a consequential averus. Okay, so I think badly about somebody, it doesn't actually do anything to him, so maybe that shouldn't be taken so seriously. So therefore that especially needs to have a negayim on the body in order to make the point that there is a serious impact. That's something that's noted in the Sefer Chavasel Sasharim. So here, talking about the Nigei Bashim, so the Rashi quotes a very interesting idea, a very surprising idea. So, you mentioned the Pasuk sounds a little bit funny, right? So you'll come into the land of Israel that I promised you, and you'll have Negoyim on your walls. So that doesn't sound like such a wonderful welcome. And the positive tone is actually picked up on by the Taurus Konim, the Rashi quotes, the Surah Hilohem, Shenegoyim Boim Aleihem. So, good news. You're going to have this gift, so to speak, of having this on your house. So why is that good news? So Rashi continues, Lefishet minu emaroyim atmonia shol zav v'kiros bateyem kol arboim shana jahay yishol b'midbar, that the Emorim hid gold in the walls all the time that the Jews were in the Midbar waiting to get there. V'aydeh ha-nega noseh sabayi sumotzon. And because you're going to have to deal with the nega situation, so you're going to knock down these walls and then you'll find the gold, so you will profit. So that seems to blur the message a little bit, because is it good news or is it bad news? We're saying that there's a tikkun here, that this is something that is meant to correct bad behavior, and yet you end up with a reward. So that itself maybe is reflective of the whole thing. It's kind of like insurance. So if somebody's house has a fire and then he gets insurance to rebuild it, so it's good news they got insurance, but it had to come through that bad process of having a fire. So it's kind of a similar structure that, yes, we should see this as coming as a consequence of bad behavior, but it is a tikkun and it's an opportunity to fix it. So the idea that there's even a reward involved, that there is this profit that's going to come from it, that's reflective of the whole idea that, yes, this is a bad thing, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel, there's a pot of gold at the end of the tunnel, that there is something here that ultimately will be to your benefit, even if it comes in the context of something that is punitive. There's some who note also that it seems like there is a higher level here, that when it comes to the house, so the Nigoy Batim, it sounds like from the Psukim that the person who has this brings it to the Kohen himself. And regarding the Gadim, it's not so obvious. It says, the Pasuk says, that it was shown to the Kohen. Doesn't necessarily mean that it was the owner of the clothes himself showing it. And when it comes to the Goyim on the body, so there, it's very unclear how it's happening. It says, the person is brought to the Kohen, and it's not necessarily clear that the person himself is deciding to present himself to the Kohen. So if that's the case, so how exactly do we relate to that difference? So there are some who suggest that what you have here is, given this whole progression that we are starting from the house and then going to the clothing and then going to the person, so there is an effort here, spiritually coming from God, to make the individual get the point. And the further it takes means that he is less aware, he's less sensitive. So the person who picks up on the message already, when it hits his house, before it goes any further than that, that's a person of particular sensitivity in the spiritual realm. And therefore, the Pasuk conveys that he's the one who brings it to be seen. Somebody who needs to wait until it actually shows up on his body. So by its very nature, then, this is somebody who's less spiritually aware. And therefore, maybe they're going to have other people bring him to the Kohen in order to make the point, because this individual simply is not getting the message. And it could be that that's also related to something else, that Chazal have a comment regarding specifically the Nigei Batim, that when they bring it to the Kohen should give him Musar Shmuz. The Kohen should say, you should know, Lashon Hara is a terrible thing, and look what happens because of it. So we find that in the context of Nigei Batim, but not in the context of the Goyim on a person. So some raise the question, why specifically here do we find the Kohen giving the Musar Shmuz? So maybe you could suggest that it correlates, that if there is a greater receptivity, so then that's the kind of person you can give the Musar Shmuz to. When you get to the individual who's not catching the message until it afflicts his body, so by his nature, he's less receptive, and the point of Musar is that you want to actually get the message across. So the one who's more receptive is the one who gets the most shmooze. As the pasuk says, you should rebuke the wise man and he'll love you for it because he'll appreciate that's a good thing. So it's specifically the one who catches on at this early stage that is potentially able to appreciate that, and maybe that's why he gets the Musar Shmooz. Just parenthetically about this point about Vuhuva, that's said regarding the Negayim on the person where he's brought. So the Rush in his commentary to the Mishnayos, just to give a little bit of synergy to what we're talking about in Gittin, so the Rush suggests that, what that pasuk means, Vuhuva, is a reference to Kfiya, that Kofin HaMitzvos, that here, even if he's not willing to present himself, so we'll present him anyway, we'll bring him to the Kohen, and maybe that's the message here, that it could happen even against his will. So there are a number of other perspectives on this idea that it's good news, that it's a corrective, and some point that also, and Chazal have a comment along these lines, and other Sfarim expand upon, that there is a midah keneged midah in the result, or there is a corrective in the result, that maybe knocking down your house is good because you'll find gold, but you also have to bring all your things out of the house, and that could end up being a sort of own issue in a particular way, because one of the issues that Chazal identify in that list, together with Lashon Hara, is tzaras ha'ayin, meaning stinginess. So a person doesn't want to share, doesn't want to help others, so that's tzaras ha'ayin, and that's included in the causes of tzaras. And here, so perhaps somebody requested to borrow something from this guy, and Ron writes in his Chuvas that just like there's a mitzvah of halva, of buying money, the Torah is very clear that if somebody is in need of financial assistance, so to help them out with a loan, is considered to be a huge mitzvah, and considered to be the model of chesed. So too, the Ron writes in his Chuvas that to lend property if they need it is also a mitzvah. So here, somebody asks for some kind of item that he needs to borrow, and you're going to say, no, I don't have it. Sorry, I don't have that item to lend you. And then it's going to be kind of awkward when you have to take the things out of your house, and it's going to be obvious to everyone that you do have this item that you claimed not to have. So there's a midah keneged midah there, that it is something that is able to counteract and to offset the stinginess and the idea that you don't want anyone else to benefit. This is also very appropriate that this is read during the days of Sfira, because the Gemara that talks about Rabbi Akiva's students who died, Divrei Chazal talk about the plague that killed off the students of Rabbi Akiva. Chazal also talk about, we know the more commonly cited phrase, Shlonogu Kavod Zelazah, they didn't show honor to each other, but Chazal also referred to them as being Saras Ayin, as having a stinginess between themselves, that they weren't willing to share, they weren't willing to share in spiritual benefits and material benefits. So that midah of Saras Ayin is a part of what we are focused on during Sfira to try to correct, and that is also associated with these types of afflictions, and particularly in this context. There is also another striking comment in the Medrash that may be related to this as well, that the Pasuk using the term Knan to identify the land. So the Medrash says that this is a reference to Eliezer of Avram, who was able to change his status from Orer to Baruch, that he was a descendant of Cham, who was cursed, and that was originally associated with Eliezer, also his descendant, and through his actions, he was able to transfer himself to convert to a status of Baruch. So there are some who suggest an interpretation of that comment over here, that this pasuk is bringing up Eliezer, so the curse that came to Cham because of what he did to Noach. So Chazal explained that he didn't want Noach to have any more children, and that's what he was trying to accomplish, because he didn't want to have to share his Yerusha with another brother. So that itself is an example of stinginess. So that's associated here. Again, the stinginess is the midah that keeps coming up. But Eliezer is the one who was actually able to flip this midah, and that's how he transferred from being Orer to being Baruch. And how did we do that? So there, Chazal tell us regarding the Pesukim and Parshas Chayisara that when Avram asked Eliezer to go on this mission to get a shidduch for Yitzchak, so it was a big conflict of interest for Eliezer because he had a daughter and he was hoping that his daughter would marry Yitzchak. And now Avram's telling him to go find somebody else to marry Yitzchak. And apparently Avram explains to him that it's a mixed marriage because you're from a Aurora line and we're from a Baruch line, and there can't be a connection between Aurora and Baruch. So one would think that Eliezer, given his interest here and his conflict of interest, that he wouldn't want to help find a different shidduch for Yitzchak. And yet, he goes all in. He does a tremendous job, and he's able to find the perfect shidduch. So that's the opposite of Tzaras Ayin. He's not saying, okay, if I can't have her, no one will. As if I can't have him as a son-in-law, no one will. Because he recognizes that, okay, this is the mission he's going to take on for its own sake, and that's a reversal of this midah of stinginess of Tzaras Ayin, and perhaps that's also a part of what we are being told here as far as this whole connection. The idea, again, that it's specifically in the land of Israel, so there are also those who note that there's a need for this as well, because the self-focus, Torah tells us, was a concern regarding the conquering of the land also. Maybe that somebody would, that the people would feel that kochi votes and yodi asali asachayel, that it's my strength, it's my power that did this, and there's no recognition of the Ribbono Shalom. So therefore, that's also a part of the need to counteract that attitude. So specifically upon coming into the land, that may also be a part of the message. It's also relevant perhaps on a different level. And Rashid of Karabiyav Goldwicht has a long essay about this in the Asufas Marachos, the idea that it's good news and the idea that it's specifically in the land of Israel. And the Pasuk really, even without the Chazal, as we noted, the Pasuk really sounds so incongruous. Oh, you'll come to the land that I promised you, and this is what's going to happen. And then Rashi telling us it's good news. So Rashiv explained that it is good news on one level because it represents the fact that we have now transitioned to a place of responsibility. Eretz Achuzaschem, that you have received the land is now yours. So a part of that, we ask any homeowner, so homeowner comes with more responsibility. So that's a good thing. And even though it's being presented here as accountability and through a punishment, but that reflects the fact that you can change your behavior and you can become greater and you can rise up to the occasion. So that ability is really a good thing, even though in the short term it's a problem, but in the long term it represents a wonderful potential, and that's something to appreciate. And of course, this is very appropriate here the week before Yom HaAtzmaut. So this focus that coming into the land and taking on all the responsibilities that come with that is ultimately a source of tremendous bracha, and the potential that accompanies that is a tremendous bracha. So as we think about the bracha of 75 years of Medina, so we can appreciate this message in association with that. And this Shabbos coming before Yom HaAtzmaut, it's an ability to really ponder just what that means and what can be done with that responsibility and the tremendous bracha that is associated with that. He also noted, the Rosh Yeshiva, that the connection to Eliezer here and what is being described about the gold in the walls, so there is a imagery there of the Ovdei Avodah Zarah having left these resources there and the resources being transferred to something positive. So that's also what this whole notion of coming into the land is, taking what was there and turning it into Avodas Hashem and turning it into making the desert bloom and showing both Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba all of the wonderful things that can be done. So that is also a part of this whole message, even if there's this difficulty associated with it, or this negativity associated with it at the beginning. But it is ultimately towards a reflection of the potential and the ability to turn it from bad things to good things. And that's also relevant to Eliezer. And here Eliezer knew that he had to be an Eved, so he said, okay, that's the end of the life. But instead he said, if I'm going to be an Eved, so I'll be an Eved of Avram. I'll recognize that I can choose the right type of individual to associate myself with and to learn from him. And indeed, that's what he does, to be able to elevate himself from Orer to Baruch through being an Eved to Avram. So that's an indication of a special type of character who recognizes that that's his mission, and that's also a part of what's being conveyed here through this, so to speak, bracha, this bracha in disguise, of there being the affliction in the household, and that giving the opportunity earlier on than otherwise to correct the issue, to fix whatever's wrong, to turn things around, to express responsibility, and to recognize that that comes with tremendous potential. And all of that is, in the long run, a bracha. So again, we don't have the ability to experience this in the real world right now, but we do have the ability to learn about these things and to ponder all these messages. And that itself is a source of bracha for us, a potential to be able to learn the lesson. It was a Hasidic Shavuot on top of a Hasidic Shavuot that the Mishnah Negayim talks about Riyas Negayim, about the role of the Kohen in examining and judging the Nega, whether it is such a thing or not. And Mishnah has a language which has a Hasidic interpretation to it, that Kol Negayim Adam Roa Chutz Mi Negei Atzmo. So the literal translation is that one can examine any nega as long as it's not his own. He can't do the examination on himself. So the Hasidic interpretation is that given that we are talking about the spiritual causes, really, that are behind this, so that is a simple reality that we're always able to see the flaws in everyone else, but not to recognize our own flaws. And that is a way of interpreting the Mishnah also. Kol Negayim Adam Roa, you're able to see all the problems with the world, Chutz Mei Negei Atzmo, with the exception of one's own flaws. And that's normal, that's human, that's the reality, that we're much more ready to see the problems in others. And that certainly also correlates to the issue of Lashon Hara, the assumption that we think everyone else is negative and everyone else has problems that we need to complain about, and we don't necessarily recognize that we're no better. And we've noted in the past, I think one of the reasons why there's a prohibition of Lashon Hara is something that's nowadays called the fundamental attribution error, which is the idea that you see somebody else doing something, you think that represents their whole character. And yet when you do it, it doesn't represent your character, it's a circumstance. So you see somebody push in front of the line, so he's a jerk. But you just pushed in front of the line an hour ago, well, that's not the same thing. You know, you were in a hurry, and you've been having a bad day, and it was important. So when you do it, it's because of the circumstances. And when somebody else does it, it comes to define who that person is. So that whole reality that we're able to see problems in others and see them as blemishes, and we don't see them in ourselves, so that is a basic human reality. And to mention there's a Hasidic Shavuot on top of the Hasidic Shavuot, so there's another level of Hasidic interpretation on that same Mishnah that doesn't just say that you can only see others' flaws but not your own, but puts the punctuation a little differently, that Kol Negayim Adam Roa Chutz Minigei Atzmo. All the Negayim that a person sees outside are really from himself. So you are aware of problems, it's really because you have these problems, and that's what's known psychologically as projection, that you interpret somebody else's behavior as negative when really it's because you have that negative trait, and therefore you, so to speak, project it onto someone else. So that's a level of interpretation here also, that you see problems in others. It's not only that you ignore your own problems, but that's specifically the reason you see famine other people is because subconsciously you recognize that this is a part of your character, but consciously you don't realize it yet. And you therefore identify with other people when really it's something that you need to correct. So I think we should appreciate that's, again, human and normal. That's just the reality, that's the way our minds work, and we should harness that for good. So when we mentioned a few months ago, I think of talking about hypocrisy, and I mentioned I wanted to write in praise of hypocrisy, because the term is often misapplied, that really hypocrisy means somebody being completely false and not believing what he is advocating. But the fact that we have standards that we don't live up to, so that's not hypocrisy, that is normal life. And as Bill Nagone said, that's why we exist, because we need a lifetime to correct our midos. So by necessity, we have to advocate things that we don't live up to so that we can push ourselves to live up to them. So the fact that we may identify problems and we're not perfect ourselves, so I don't think that's hypocrisy, that's normal, that's what human beings do, and we can harness that power in order to become better. So this idea that kol nagayim shadim ro achutz menigei atzmo, that whatever you see in others is really from your own deficiencies, so some might call that hypocrisy, but we can call that human, and you can say, recognize that and harness that. And when one is forced to contemplate the Lashon Hara that he has spoken, because he is isolated because of his tzaras, he can take that opportunity and say, okay, so I was saying all kinds of things about other people, and maybe I wasn't fully aware that really it's an issue with me, and that's why I was projecting it onto other people. So instead of being so afraid of such so-called hypocrisy, we can harness it for good, like we just said a few minutes ago about that message here as well, that we can take the negative aspect here and we can turn it around, and we can recognize that if indeed we have been speaking badly about others, maybe it means that there's a lot that we need to reflect about, whether it's a tendency towards negativity or whether more specifically, whatever it is that we've been identifying as other people's problems, maybe they really are problems, and maybe we can take this opportunity to grow from that and to move a step further. So as we listen to the long rendition of both of these parashios, the Shabbos with all of its gruesome detail, we should take that as an opportunity to be grateful that we don't have to actually go through that at this time in history, but also be even more grateful for the messages contained within it and for the opportunity to correct whatever we can while it's still possible, and use that to prepare for a far more glorious future. We wish you all a wonderful Shabbos, and we'll see you soon.